across America and around the world. You're listening to America's number one program for veterans, Veterans Radio. And now, live from the studios of WDEO in Ann Arbor, Michigan, here's your host for today's program, former Chief Warrant Officer, helicopter pilot with the 195th Assault Helicopter Company, Republic of Vietnam, 1969, Dale Throneberry.
And a Happy New Year to all of you from all of us here at Veterans Radio. We want to welcome you to the beginning of another incredible year of veteran stories, talking about veterans' benefits, talking with civilians about trying to find out what veterans are going through, those that are active and those that are inactive. So we want to welcome you to our program today. We're going to be talking about some of our programs from last year. And we encourage you to give us a call and let us know what favorite programs you'd like us to talk about today. Our number here is 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. Let us know what popular program you want us to talk about, because we did 52 of them last year, and we're going to be talking about our favorites, so we want to get your input. Joining me in the studio right now is our CB Can-Do, Gary Lilly. Good morning, Gary, and Happy New Year.
Good morning, and Happy New Year to you. Good morning, Matt. Good morning, Bob, out there. Bob Gould's not in. And good morning to every continent except Antarctica. We've got listeners on all of the others, so Antarctica, get with the program.
That's right. Yeah, we want to hear from you down in Antarctica, because we know it's probably a little bit colder there than it is here. We are coming to you from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For those that are local or listening, it's 990 AM WDEO, and we want to say Happy New Year to all of the crew at WDEO, and we couldn't do Veterans Radio without you. We want to thank you so very much for doing that. And as a reminder, we are in our fundraising time period, I guess you could say. And I know Bob just sent out a letter, and we're going to be sending ours out soon, too. We're coming into 2011. We've got our budget set. We want to expand our audience, so we need your help. And we've set up an unusual arrangement with Ave Maria Radio, and you can help us out. And you can send a check, a tax-deductible check, to Ave Maria Radio, P.O. Box 504, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48106. Again, I'll repeat that, and those of you that are watching on the webcast, it's up there. You make your check out to Ave Maria Radio. That's a tax deduction, because Ave Maria Radio is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We're working on our own, but if you send a check to them, and down in the memo section of the check, you write in Veterans Radio, they will apply it toward our account, which is will be very helpful for them and also for us.
Very important. Otherwise, they keep the money.
That's right. We want to make sure that we can pay our own freight this year, and this is one way that we thought that we could do it, and Ave Maria agreed with that. So it's a great opportunity for you to get the tax deduction, for us to get some of our bills paid. And because it is as nice as Ave Maria Radio is, our time in the studio is not free.
And right now we are self-funding.
that's right. And if all of you out there, especially in the Michigan area, know the economy is just
wonderful.
Just wonderful.
On
the way up, as they keep saying, and we keep watching, and we're hoping that will happen. But anyway, that's one way for you to help us out. Go to our website. The address is there. Again, that's P.O. Box 504, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48106. Make the check out to Ave Maria Radio, and in the memo, put down Veterans Radio, and we will get all of those funds, and we greatly appreciate your support over the last 7 years. Can you believe that? 7 years we've been doing this.
That's over 350 programs we've done. Amazing.
That's right.
There's about, 25 million veterans. That's... We've got, 24,900,000?
I think we have enough to fill out another 7 years or so. But we won't be able to do it without your help. So contribute to Veterans Radio by going through Ave Maria Radio. And, again, we really do appreciate all of your support and all of your listeners out there. And if you'd like to talk about a program, matter of fact, we're going to start doing that in just a moment, to talk about, look back in retrospect, what went on last year, not only with our veteran stories, some of the books that were out last year. We're going to play a couple of short clips from some of our interviews and kind of remind you, but strongly encourage you to go to our website, veteransradio.net, and listen to our archives. We've got them all up there, and I think that you'll enjoy them. So give us a call again. That's 877-573-7825. And we're going to work right into our Welcome Home segment so we can get into talking about the programs from last year. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home men and women that are serving America around the world. And this first day of January 2011, I said it right, is good. We want to welcome home all of you that have come home from wherever you were stationed around the world, Iraq, Afghanistan, Korea now, other hot spots around the world. Welcome home. We just are so grateful for what you have done for us and you. All of you that are on active duty, you are this America's greatest generation. And so we want to make sure that you know how much we appreciate what you do. So on behalf of a grateful nation and all of us here at Veterans Radio, welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
We're back on Veterans Radio. I know you all are familiar with the Andrews Sisters. Unfortunately, we couldn't have them live in our studio, but we always have them on our CDs and always remember those songs.
Right now, their walkers are probably a little bit stiff and oiled.
I don't know about that. I'll digress and we'll get way off track here. But I saw them in a movie the other day, an Abbott and Costello movie, and they were doing bugle voices. That kind of stuck in my mind as a theme. And I wanted to do that because in the first segment of the program today, we're going to be talking a little bit about World War II. It was one of some of the stories that we talked about this year that had to do with World War II. And we want to encourage you, if you've got a favorite program that you want to talk about, give us a call. Again, it's 877-573-7825, and we'll talk about your program. But I know, Gary, you had one that was near and dear to your heart that you wanted to talk about.
Near and dear to my heart because I happen to know Merle Eastman personally. He was the chaplain at the VFW Post 423. I belong to it. I should remember it. VFW Post 423. Merle became a chaplain because of what happened one night on his destroyer in Typhoon Cobra, the first typhoon ever to be given a name. The United States Halsey's fleet got caught in the middle of it. The Navy lost three destroyers, at the Hull, the Monahan, and the Spence, more than 800 sailors, and tremendous damage to the rest of the fleet. It just had to go back in for repairs, other than the capital ships like the battleships. But even the aircraft carriers were catching fire from planes crashing around below decks. So the first segment, I have Merle Eastman and Captain Calhoun on it. Captain Calhoun sets it up pretty good.
Please describe that typhoon for us. This one was, we lost three Navy ships, three destroyers, and over 800 men, and our aircraft carriers were burning, and it was pretty bad. Tell us about the typhoon, if you would, please.
Well, that's a big story to tell about.
Yeah, and you got 30 seconds.
this particular storm struck us beginning on the 17th of December, at which time we were refueling the destroyers that were accompanying the fast carrier task force. And on the 17th, when they were supposed to refuel, it was so rough that fueling from another ship was simply not feasible. We found that we couldn't maintain station alongside of another ship close enough to allow the fuel hoses to stretch into the tanks. So we were having great difficulty, and we were seriously concerned about the level of fuel that was left in several of the destroyers that had been accompanying the carrier force a few days earlier. They were down to something like 10,000 gallons in one case, and that was on a ship that whose normal capacity was about 240,000 gallons. So he was practically out of gas.
That was a very serious, serious situation for some of the destroyers. They became top-heavy because of being so low on fuel. And I didn't realize it, but they would flood the fuel oil tanks, the bunkers, I think they're called, with seawater, and the oil floats on top. But if they didn't get it ballasted enough, they were so top-heavy they would go over. And that may be what happened to the Hull and Monahan and Spence. So we're going to go now to Merle Eastman, and he'll describe what it was like below deck.
What was your feeling during the height of the storm, Reverend?
Well, my feeling was that we were going to be lost at sea. And I actually prayed for my family back home that when they got the word that I was lost at sea, that they would accept it and go on with their lives and make the best of it.
You were pretty. You went from being afraid to very calm, did you?
Oh yes. Oh yeah.
When you accept death, you become calm.
Yeah. I realized that it was all over, and I was ready for it.
Still in awe, you're a reverend today.
Well, I am because of what happened that day. Because when the ship was lying on its side, I heard a voice, definitely, that said, if I got you out of this, would you do anything I would ask you to do? And I was in no position to do any bargaining, so I did answer quite quickly and said, yes, I would. And then the voice said again, would you preach? And that threw me, but I didn't wait too long. I said I'd even do that. I knew my father was a...
Merle Eastman, he's got a great sense of humor. That ship was laying on its side for a couple of minutes at a time. Sometimes water would be coming in the funnel. And we're going to be hearing from Captain Calhoun. He's going to be describing what it was like up on the bridge. So here's Captain Calhoun.
Captain...
Yes, sir.
At any time during this storm, were you terrified?
No. I was convinced that we were not going to capsize.
Now, you were over on your side. The ship was on its side, and you were still convinced that you weren't going to?
That's right.
What?
Maybe I was a little crazy in those days.
Well, that helps.
But anyway, no, I never did believe we were going to go down.
When the ship rolled over on its side, how long would it stay there?
Well, it seemed as though it stayed there for a half an hour, but it probably was no more than about 2 or 3 minutes.
Those
were agonizing minutes because we didn't know if they would right themselves. It would right itself, but I never believed that we would do that. And when I sent the word to the people who were below decks that they should be prepared to abandon ship, I was simply being ready
right.
in the event that happened. But I didn't believe it was happening.
Well, it's when people hear that the secret is disclosed that this country has plans to invade another country, it's not that they plan on doing it, it's just that in the military, especially, you have to be ready for any set of circumstances.
Right.
And that's what you're saying that you did. Was,
yes.
You know, in the event that it came, that you didn't want to catch anybody by surprise, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, that came about because the bosun, my warrant officer, who was much older than the average crewman, came to me during the storm and said, Captain, are we going to abandon ship? And I said, no. So long as the Dewey's going to hang in there, we're going to hang into the Dewey.
And speaking of hanging, I read an account, and I put in a flyer that you were hanging by a stanchion. Was it you or another officer was hanging?
That was me, and I was frequently aware that my squadron commander, who was a passenger on our ship, we were his flagship, he and I would be both hanging vertically from the, in my case, from a stanchion, which was normally vertical, and he was hanging from the base of his bridge chair, and both were facing each other, probably 3 feet apart, conducting conversations that day. In one case, he asked me if I thought that I would be able to manage in the event that I got into the water. And I said, yeah, I thought so. And he said, well, I don't think I could. He said, of course, you're younger than I am. And then he said, but I'm not going to worry about it because my insurance is all paid up.
Did you ever look down between your feet when you were hanging?
Indeed, we did. And
what would you see?
In fact, I used that expression to describe the number of degrees we rolled when the representatives of the Bureau of Ships came aboard the ship in Ulithi when the storm was over and we returned to port. The first thing that happened was that these new ship's technicians, all of them captains, four stripers, the first thing they asked me was, how far did you roll? And I knew from experience that if I told them it was X number of degrees, they would proceed to tell me that I couldn't possibly have rolled that far. So I avoided using a number of degrees, and I said, I don't know how many degrees we rolled, but I do know that I was hanging from a stanchion with my hands, and the stanchion was normally vertical, and I was looking down past my feet, which were clear of the deck, and past my feet, I was looking right through the starboard bridge window, so had I let go, I would have fallen directly into the sea.
They almost lost the Dewey, and what saved them was their funnel blew off, and then part of the other superstructure, their whaleboat, and that cut down enough of the pressure of the wind that agonizingly slow they were able to come back up and then not go over so far, but which is good because they didn't have a funnel, which left a big gaping hole right. That closer to the water. But also, there was rescue going on, and some of the other ships realized that there were ships had gone down because there were people in the water, and they were conducting rescues at night with their searchlights. When the captain of the Dewey saw that, he headed towards the searchlights. He assumed that's what was going on. The commander, and they would be crashing through the waves because they're at a bad angle for just riding them out. And the commander said, well, it's your ship. You can do what you want, but if you keep this up, I think we're going to lose her. I think she'll bust up. And so he thought, well, that's pretty smart. And so he just left the rescuing to the other ships. And he said, indeed, later on when the ship was checked out, there were cracks in the hull. So had they kept on going, they would have busted up.
Not a surprise. For those of you that want to listen to that entire story of the Dewey, you can go back into our archives at veteransradio.net. And it's 19 June 2010. We broadcast that program. It's entitled Surviving Typhoon Cobra in 1944. I think it's so fascinating when we get the opportunity to talk to these World War II veterans because they are passing at an incredible rate nowadays. Right. Most of them are in their 80s. Some of them are in their 90s. Some, if they had lived, would be over 100 years old today. And so it's really important that we get these stories down. We talked about a couple of other World War II incidences, and I'm trying to go through this list of the 50 programs that we did last year. And we had a forward artillery observer that was on, and he talked about going into Germany as a forward air artillery observer and getting out, you know, where he could see into the eyes almost of the Germans, and that was looking for the date here. But it's just fascinating to me. And Bob did a couple of programs. He did one entitled "War Beneath the Waves" about the USS Billfish. That was on October 30th.
That was a fascinating submarine story in which the fourth officer in seniority had to actually take over the submarine because the captain, the executive officer, and then the next ranking officer all had nervous breakdowns and just became paralyzed with fear. And so this young lieutenant took over command of the submarine.
And that was kind of hushed up for a long time because it was, you know, you didn't like the idea of you know, of taking over. You know, you mentioned the guest on that program talked about having a conversion. You know, if you let me live, I'll become a minister or priest or whatever. We have a couple of examples of that.
We
also did a program back on the 13th of March called Battlefields and Blessings, and it was stories of faith and courage in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that talked about a number of different conversions that occurred. And I can't think of anybody who hasn't been in a situation sometimes in combat where you haven't asked for some guidance and said, okay, if I get through this, I'll be a much better person. I promise.
And I made that promise myself, even though I wasn't even in combat like
you
guys.
But some of these people really, you know, they lived up to the promise. And I think that was so important. I want you to talk, Gary, just a little bit about the Bent Prop Project program that you did back in January 16th of 2010. I found that to be a fascinating story.
Oh, it is indeed. The Bent Prop Project is some people that volunteered and just got together on their own, and they realized that there was still a lot of people missing from World War II. I think it's about 75,000. And they had an interest in flying. They had an interest in the ocean. And so they said, okay, we're going to form a group, we'll make it formal, we'll self-fund, and they would go into the archives, and they would find out in the first instance where a B-24 bomber went down, it was shot down. And it's amazing because on that program, I think we've got video of the plane getting hit and its wing blown off and go down in the water, not far off of the island. So they went over there. We had Paul Schwimmer was the guest who was in the Bent Prop Project. He's a surveyor, and that was his job, is to pinpoint, you know, by what they had, where the plane might be, or pinpoint where, in one case, five bodies would be that the Japanese beheaded and then buried them. And he actually, on that last one, was able to narrow it down to a 50-meter by 50-meter site, and that would be by taking the testimony of Japanese on their war crime trials, and they would tell, in this case, they even drew a map of where it was. And then he would take aerial surveillance, World War II photos that they got out of the archives, and compare them to photographs today by overlaying the negatives.
Goodness.
Yeah, and then take that and mark the map in, and so 50 by 50 meters, and they all got shoulder to shoulder, and Paul was the guy that happened to find them.
I thought that was just a fascinating program. That's called the Bent Prop Project, and that was on January 16th of 2010. That was one of our programs. And these are just local people that want to stay involved and want to do something. And there are so many stories out there of people that do that, and we want to make sure that we get an opportunity to tell those stories. So if you have something that you are involved in, or you know somebody who's back looking for remains of veterans or bodies that might never have been recovered, which is, you know, we're going to talk about a little bit later, I just think it's so important that you let us know so we can spread the word, because maybe you want to get involved. Maybe somebody wants to get a hold of is it Don, right?
And if you are, if you do find remains, do not touch them, because they need, they turn over the location to JPAC in Hawaii that is doing the recovery, and they need to come in, and a lot of times they'll make an ID based on a single tooth. And your best DNA is in your tooth, it turns out. So they do I'm not going to try to say it. They do DNA testing.
Well, we've had a couple of stories like that over the years.
Right.
Where we've worked with JPAC and come on and we've talked to them. And I can't bring it off the top of my head right now when it was. But I know we had one where they found some bodies in Vietnam up near the DMZ that they were able to come back and identify that had been missing for, you know, for 40 years.
And they also looked for dog tags. They looked for scraps of clothing. And they can compare the clothing to what clothing was worn in that era, uniforms. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different things that go into it. So if you touch anything, you might cost the evidence that we'll be able to identify the person.
Well, you got to be careful, too, because we're finding out that there are people selling fake dog tags out there. Or they found them, and they're on the black market now, and they've kind of traveled around the world, and we're not really sure where they came from.
I'm told it's a cottage industry over in Vietnam making dog tags that look like they were very old. It takes a really good eye to tell that they're not the right thing, and sometimes it's simply because they beat them up and they make them look old, soak them in the ground and all that kind of stuff, but the hole where the chain would go through was a recent drilling, and so
that was clean. Huh?
Yeah, or the letters.
There was a tape mark on the back where we used to tape them together.
Right.
And you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we're taking a look back at the programs that we did in 2010. So we encourage you to give us a call if you get a chance, 877-573-7825. We're going to be talking about many of the stories that we did, and there are a couple that we have some breaking news on, and I've got one that I want to talk about in the next, I think we've got about 3 minutes till we come up to the bottom of the hour today, and that one was called Left 4 Dead. And Left 4 Dead was about a helicopter crew chief whose aircraft was shot down in 1968, the night before Tet began. And the helicopter was shot down because the thought originally was as the pilot was making his approach to the landing zone, there was a whole bunch of burning ash and stuff that was in there, and it all flew up around the helicopter, and they thought that the pilot got vertigo, thought he was much closer to the ground than he was, and he landed very hard, and when he hit the ground, the aircraft rolled over on its side, and I think we've got a picture of it up on the webcast.
It is right now.
And this is Wendell Skinner, the crew chief that was underneath that aircraft. And during the battle, the pilot went out through the windshield. The co-pilot, his face was all messed up. The door gunner went flying out another airway. There was a special forces team on the ground. And in all the chaos of getting everybody out, Wendell was left on the ground.
They assumed he was dead.
They assumed that he was dead. Flew back to the area. The major, who was Major Carlson, at the time found out about this. And he said, "You never leave anybody out in the field." He went back out with another crew to get Wendell, which he was fortunate enough to do. Got Wendell out of the landing zone. Wendell's leg was all torn up. He ended up going to Japan, and they didn't see each other for 40 years.
Didn't he go out in the night? Was it night?
Went out at night with just a single ship, no guns, nothing like that. Landed in the landing zone, got out of the helicopter, told the co-pilot to take off again because he didn't want to draw attention to the LZ. Because the bad guys always go to wherever the
helicopter. Well, they were already there. They shot down a helicopter.
And so, anyhow, 40 years later, Wendell and Major Carlson finally get back together. They've been searching for whoever it was that saved my life, and I wonder what happened to that guy. He figured he'd lost his leg and so forth. Well, the exciting thing about this is after we did this program, Wendell got an email from one of the Special Forces team on the ground. Now, the pilot of the helicopter for 40 years had thought it was his fault that Wendell had gotten hurt and that he'd gotten left in the LZ. And this guy was going through much stress, post-traumatic stress disorder, blame, all these other things. Well, it turns out that Wendell got an email from one of the Special Forces troops on the teams on the ground, and it turns out that the helicopter didn't crash. As he was making his approach, the rotor blades got hit by a rocket and were blown off the helicopter.
He was shot down.
He was shot down. He didn't crash. He dropped from the air because he didn't have rotor blades anymore.
Right.
Well, Wendell got a hold of Woody, the pilot, told him this. He said that Woody cried for many, many minutes and just said, he says, "I can breathe again. Thank you so very much for giving." That's what happens on Veterans Radio, folks. And that's why we want you to listen and we want you to support it. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant Jack Jacobs, although seriously wounded, made repeated trips across an open rice paddy, evacuating wounded and their weapons. Details after this.
As a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, joining IAVA.org really helps in the transition home. It's a network of OIF and OEF vets like me who've got your back here, just like we did over there. That means when you need help navigating the GI Bill, we've got your back. And when you're dealing with the transition home, we've got your back. Or when you just want someone to share stories with, we've got your back. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org. We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
Jacob served as an assistant battalion advisor in Kien Phong Province, Republic of Vietnam. The battalion was advancing when it came under intense heavy machine gun and mortar fire. Jacobs called for and directed airstrikes on the enemy positions. Due to the intensity of the enemy fire and heavy casualties to the command group, including the company commander, the attack stopped and the friendly troops became disorganized. Wounded by mortar fragments, Jacobs assumed command of the company, ordered a withdrawal from the exposed position, and established a defensive perimeter. Despite heavy bleeding from head wounds that impaired his vision, Jacobs returned under intense fire to evacuate a seriously wounded advisor to safety, where he administered life-saving first aid. He then returned through heavy automatic weapons fire to evacuate the wounded company commander. Jacobs made repeated trips across the fire-swept open rice paddies, evacuating wounded and their weapons. On three separate occasions, Jacob drove off Viet Cong squads who were searching for Allied wounded and weapons, single-handedly killing three and wounding several others. His actions saved the lives of a U.S. advisor and 13 Allied soldiers. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
I love Sousa. I just, you know, John Philip Sousa is just the epitome of American march music, and it's just, I love to play it and hear it, and, you know, it'd be nice to probably play it all the way through for all of you out there.
But well, it's definitely not an Irish song.
No, it's not an Irish jig. It's not an Irish jig. I wanted to just kind of jump back to that Medal of Honor segment that we just played. That was Jack Jacobs, and Jack Jacobs was on Veterans Radio also, and he was back on the 27th of March of 2010, and well, he's Colonel Jack Jacobs now, but he has written a book entitled If Not Now, When? Duty and Sacrifice in America's Time of Need. I think that if you go back and listen to that program, you'll find it really fascinating. He's telling us that in the book, we gotta take charge here. I mean, a lot of us are just standing around watching what is happening, and it's going to be very interesting. Now, today, around the country, there are brand new people coming into government on a national and local levels, and I got a feeling there's going to be some changes going on, and it should be very exciting to see how that works, and I'm looking forward to it. But I want to make sure that Jack Jacobs, if you want to go find a great book, it's called If Not Now, When? The other thing is Left for Dead was a program that we did on the 25th of September 2010, and Wendell is trying to write a story about this, and so anybody out there who thinks that they could be a good ghostwriter, this is a hell of a story.
It really is,
and he just wants some help to get it down on paper.
Just prior to that, we did the Battle of Nui Yan Hill, which I ended up doing in two parts because it was a ferocious battle over in
Vietnam.
That's
right, we did.
Right. And after the first segment, I got an email from a Vietnamese graduate student in Japan who had just listened to the program and had just ordered the book already from Barnes & Noble that was written, Tam Ki, The Battle of Nui Yan Hill. And he wanted to get in contact with the author, one of our guests, because his grandfather had been killed nearby on about that same time, and he was hoping that this guest could fill in some of the details that might have led to a discovery of where mm-hmm. his grandfather is, or at least how he died. They became friends on Facebook. But here it was, a Vietnamese guy listening to our program in Japan.
I think it's amazing, and we're always so grateful when you contact us and fill us in on some of the things that are missing from some of our stories. For instance, the helicopter pilot in Left 4 Dead doesn't have to suffer anymore because it wasn't his fault. And a lot of times we're going to find that out as we go along. I think that one of the other stories, it wasn't this year, but that went along with contacting us, was when somebody called up and said that they had known my father World War II. And I'm going, holy smokes. And when, if you're watching the webcast, one of the pictures that was shown up there was my father's LST that was burning because it had gotten hit by a kamikaze pilot. And somebody had sent me that picture. So, you know, you go, oh, Dad, why couldn't I have done that? But it's just fascinating when we think about all of the people that we've had the privilege of talking to. And one of them that we had a privilege of talking to and I want to go into right now is Bill McDonald. And Bill McDonald is the founder of the Military Writers Society of America. And Bill has also worked with PTSD patients for about 30 years through the VA. He said initially starting off in Kalamazoo, and he started off with a writing project to get people to get their feelings out as one way of doing it. You know, sometimes we can't talk to people, but sometimes we can put it down on paper. And it turned out to be a very successful program. But we had Bill on our program back in October to give the Founders Award for the military writers to the authors of the book Uncommon Valor about Medal of Honor recipients. So now we're going to go to a little bit of that interview.
Books out, I mean, really good books, but they weren't that level that I was looking for until I read Uncommon Valor. And as soon as I read that, I sent a message out and said, this is it. This has to be recognized. Not only is the book very well written, I mean, it's entertaining. It's also a resource guide and background on the history of these individuals in Iraq and Afghanistan, these six warriors who earned the medal. There's also a history of the award itself and the politics involved into it and what the award's all about. It's a fascinating study of human nature, of battle, of valor, of heroes. And you find out the common ground is there is no common ground. It's all a bunch of different individuals and as unique as a snowflake. And that's what makes the book that much more enthralling. I mean, it's literally a book that you can pick up and read nonstop. I mean, it's also a book I'm finding this morning as I sit here waiting, as I'm going through it another time after reading it initially, there's things I'm rediscovering. I mean, there was real subtle things in the book that you read it, but then you go, wow, that's really kind of neat. So it's one of those books of the kind that you can read over and over again and share, and it's obviously a work of love and joy by the authors. I mean, Dwight Zimmerman and John Grisham have really put together, it can only be described as a masterpiece. It's, you know, a lot of people out there that aren't military, this is a good book for them. It's not just for military-minded people. People like to read military genre. This is about human interest. And it talks about these guys when they were growing up and their family life and what the battles were like and what emotions they went through and the politics and probably some of the things that might interest some people. When they talk about General Douglas MacArthur and how he got his award and the politics involved in that and the politics of Charles Lindbergh flying across the Pacific Atlantic and getting his award. So it's a really phenomenal book. It's written very well. The prose in this thing is it flows. It makes sense. The research is out.
Well, I know Bill was going on and on about that book, so I encourage you, if you could find it, to go out and look at Uncommon Valor. It's the story of the six Medal of Honor recipients in Afghanistan and Iraq, the first ones to be awarded the Medal of Honor, and all posthumously up until recently. There was the first one that was alive. But it's a great history of the Medal of Honor, what it takes to earn it, the people that have earned it in the past, and as Bill was pointing out, the politics that are involved with that. And that came from our program the 23rd of October 2010, part of the Tear in the Desert, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. But the Uncommon Valor program, that was back in May. And so we had the authors on, Dwight Zimmerman and John Grisham, to talk about their book, Uncommon Valor. And that was one where you filled in for me. So I greatly appreciate that. But it's a fascinating book.
Yes, and we get the books from the authors to read, and you're a speed reader, thankfully, because it takes me about a month to get through a book. So I just come to realize how many great books are being written out there.
Oh, they're fascinating. We've got one that we want to talk about right now from that same program, and that was called Tear in the Desert, and it was our 23rd of October 2010. And this is a book written by Father Ron Moses Camarda. And Father Ron is a reluctant warrior. I can't go through the whole interview with you and have you listen to it, but I was listening to it again last night. And this guy, he's a fascinating man, devoted to God and his troops and his mission, but he's reluctant. He says they asked him to go to Iraq, and he goes, no, I don't want to go to Iraq. They asked him to go to Okinawa, and he goes, no, I don't want to go to one. He says, what are you doing, putting me with Marines? I don't want to be with the Marines, and so on and so forth. And he says constantly throughout this book, which is entitled Tear in the Desert, which you really should read, especially the Ave Maria audience. I think you'll find this book right up your alley. You're going to like this one a lot. But we took a segment out where he's talking about arriving in Fallujah, Iraq, and he's working as a medic in a sort of a MASH hospital. And the book is based on his journals that he took. And I believe just before this segment starts, he talks about that he saw approximately 2,000 wounded, 80-some died, 12 died in front of him. And so he's trying to react and trying to figure out how he can write this. So can we go to this right now, Matt?
2,000 names that I had written in there, 1,500 casualties in my 7 months over there, and 81 deaths, in which 12 died in front of me.
Well, I want to get to that. I want to tell our audience again, we're talking with Father Ron Moses Camardi, who's the author of Tear in the Desert, which is taken from his journal that we were just mentioning here on Veterans Radio. And Father Ron, I want you to talk a little bit about what it was like with all those casualties coming in, because in your previous life as a priest, you weren't exposed to that kind of horrific damage to a human being.
Exactly. I found a journal entry that I had written after I had returned, that I was sitting back reflecting, and I wrote, in a sense, each tear that I witnessed in the desert was, in a sense, my tear. I'm incapable, like God, to experience the tear as a gift. I was crying also. I struggle. The heart of some was pierced and drained. The only relief would or could be the creator of blood and heart. My being was parched. Only one drop, one tear, would be needed to flood the dryness and emptiness. And with that rejuvenation, as in all storms, there is a genuine danger. As we take in tear in the desert, there is a blessing and a grave danger. In the storm, Jesus is coming to you. Don't be afraid. He is your love and source of being. Don't be afraid. And go to him. Walk on the flood of tears and don't look away. Have faith, and if you do, receive his hand. And Jesus will grab me and say, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And move on. Focus on Jesus. Follow him through the tear. As the people followed Moses, only the desert is blooming and flowing with life eternal. While I was over there, when the people would come in, the first thing that I did, I said, okay, buddy, the Marines are stripped down. As soon as they come into Bravo Surgical, I have a bodyguard that was with me. We were like the religious ministry team.
Mm-hmm.
So Patrick was a Methodist, and he was from Ohio State, had twin boys that were about 5 years old and a little daughter about nine. And he was supposed to defend me. I'm the only military people, chaplains are the only ones without a weapon out there. And he said, so he would strip them down. We'd look at the dog tags, find out what their faith would be if we knew anything. Sometimes I would just have to ask them because maybe their dog tag said no preference. Like the Jewish people always put no preference because you don't want that on your dog tags if you get caught.
Right.
So when they would come in, I would say, okay, buddy, breathe in through your nose and exhale. And they're all like shaking, and they were trying to get the morphine, and the nurses and the doctors, at first I didn't know what I was doing there. So I said, breathe in and breathe out. And if you can ask to everybody, ask, just look, if everybody of your listeners would just do that, if everyone, please just breathe in through your nose really deeply. and exhale through your mouth.
I feel
depending on
their,
yeah, it's just amazing.
It works. You'll need to try it. Breathe in through your nose, exhale through your mouth. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio on this New Year's Day, 2011. That last segment was Tear in the Desert, Father Ron Camarda. Go buy the book. I think it's going to work.
Well, we all had, he went on to describe the operating room and one particular guy, and we all had tears in our eyes.
I just listened to it myself all the way through last night, and it's very powerful. And anyway, that was, Father, that was 23rd of October, 2010. Joining us. Not live. Well, he's live, I guess. Anyway, on the phone is one of the founders of Veterans Radio, Airborne Bob Gould. How you doing, Bobby?
I'm on light duty. Yeah, the top kick put me on light duty for the last week or so. Couldn't make it in, but I want to wish all of our listeners and all of our sponsors, thank you very much for making a successful 2010. And I'm looking forward to it, and I know in talking with Gary and Dale and Vance and Maddie, we're all looking forward to another 2011. We want to bring Veterans Radio to you, and I want to be there. Dale, can I just very quickly mention two, three programs that I got coming up?
Very quickly, Robert.
Okay, very quickly. Aircraft carriers. Hey, can you think of anything bigger than that? Going to do a couple of programs on aircraft carriers, going to do one on submarines, another one on the submarines, and we're going to do another one on optional therapy for PTSD. So once again, stay tuned to Veterans Radio. Thank you guys for putting me on. God bless you all, and let's look forward to a prosperous 2011.
All right, thanks, Bob. Same to you.
God bless. Bye.
God bless. All right, well, as you can always tell, Bob is always very excited, and it's always great because his enthusiasm rubs off on all of us.
I wish you could put it on a needle and inject it in yourself.
I don't want any needles hurt, but a bottle or something along those lines. Anyway, we were going to get into in our final segment today, which is we've got about 7 or 8 minutes to go, and talking about our programs from 2010. I thought it was a great year. I know you guys really went all out to pick up, I think, interesting and exciting stories. And
it happened, and we've had some great guests on. And this one we're going to hear right now is Gunny Lee Ermey. And if you've seen the Geico commercial, if you've seen the Geico commercial where it says, does a... I'm sorry, does a Gunny... does a former drill instructor make a good therapist? And it goes on to that scene in the shrink's office, and that's the therapist is Gunny Lee Ermey.
Gunny, I want to spend the last half of this program talking about that bill and the whys and the wherefores. I would like to introduce you to the audience. Those that don't know you, there are civilians out there, and we get a lot of civilians listening to us. They love the program. You're a movie star. You've been in 60 movies. You've been in TV programs. You've done voiceover for Family Guy, The Simpsons, Toy Story, you know, a Disney film or animated film.
We have a new Toy Story coming out too in the next month or so.
Oh, really?
Toy Story 3 was on the horizon.
Who were you in the Toy Stories?
Now, I'm the Sarge.
It
seems like through the years, I've been doing this for 35 years, and through the years, if there's a military person in the show, I get the script. It's been, I mean, a little bit typecasting there, but I went through a point where I turned down all the military roles just so I could kind of break the typecast.
Didn't work.
I've done judges, I've done sheriffs, I've done bad guys. I've done everything now, so I feel good about it.
How did you get into acting?
Well, I went back. When I retired from the Marine Corps, I really didn't have much of an education, didn't know what I was going to do, so I was an instructor in the Marine Corps, and I found myself standing outside the gate of the Marine Corps recruit depot in San Diego, California, with nothing. I owned nothing more than a sea bag full of military gear, and I didn't even own a car, but I knew that, and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, and I was a good instructor while I was in the Marine Corps, and in order to be a good instructor, you have to basically be a stand-up comedian. So I wrote a script, and I went up to Hollywood. It was just up the road, so I wrote a script, and I went up there, and I started doing the comedy clubs, got my foot in the door, and I was pretty successful at it. I was supporting myself, basically, so I was doing good. But I was still sleeping on a buddy's couch. Couldn't afford much. But I heard a guy came in one day, one of my friends came into one of the comedy clubs, and he told me that they were getting ready to start shooting Vietnam War shows in the Philippine Islands and that I should look into it. Well, I jumped Space A and went down to George Air Force Base here in California, and I jumped did Space A, space available on an airplane that went to the Philippines, first Guam, then the Philippines. I got there, and I took advantage of the GI Bill of Rights and enrolled in college, went to school, waiting for those shows to come over, and then Apocalypse Now, Boys and Company C, Purple Hearts, all of them came over, and I worked in all of them, so it just... Once you get involved in this stuff, well, it's kind of hard not to get uninvolved, we'll put it that way. So I kept getting phone calls from directors and producers, and next thing I know, it's 35 years have gone by, and I'm still doing it, so...
Yeah, you are. You've got television...
Okay.
Excuse me, you've got television program.
I had a show on the History Channel called... Lock and Load, and prior to that, I had a show that ran for about six years called Mail Call, and those shows were in direct. We were in direct contact with the military at all times with those shows because they were all about weapons and guns and cannons and artillery and airplanes and things of that nature that the military have. So basically, when I got retired back in 1972, I just kept showing up for work with the Marine Corps. That's all.
Well, Gunny is a character, and Bob Gould phoned in and asked him to go through the greeting that you get when you join the military and you get off the bus. But Gunny
did. We're setting that up right now.
Yep. And what Gunny did was the opening scene of. Full Metal Jacket, yes, which is hilarious. When I panicked when he said he was going to do that, and you'll hear it in the recording.
Yeah, we're just queuing it up right now, and
okay.
I want to thank everybody for listening to our program. I don't know if we'll have any time when we get back just after playing this little segment, so we want to make sure that you all keep tuning in to Veterans Radio every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, and here is the Drill Sergeant.
Hunting. Hey, Bob Gould from our program is called back in on the air. He's got a quick question for you, Gunny.
Sure.
Bob?
Hey, Gunny, this is Bob Gould. I was right there in the studio. I'm in the car right now, but I've got a request. I always love it. Remember, we have no delay. No delay. We're live. Would you please, just very quickly, very briefly, welcome the troops, the new kids, the new recruits when they come off the bus. I love it the way you do that.
You're talking
about 20 seconds of that.
Oh, he's talking about the first scene out of the the Full Metal Jacket. You want that?
Yes, as it can go out over Catholic radio.
Oh, no problem. I cleaned it up nicely. I never swear. The only time I swear is if it's in the script and it's written and I can't get around it, and I'll always try to change it. But directors and producers, when they put stuff in there, they like it done, you know. So, but I always try to change it. Here you go. I've cleaned it up a little bit. I am Gunnery Sergeant Hartman. I am your senior drill instructor. From now on, you will speak only when spoken to. The first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, bull
feathers.
Yes, sir.
Bull feathers, I can't hear you. Sound off like you've got a pair.
Sir, yes, sir.
If you ladies leave my island, if you survive recruit training, you will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death praying for war. But until that day, you are pukes. You are scumbags. You are the lowest form of life on earth. You are not even human beings. You are nothing but a lot of little unorganized, rabastic pieces of civilian poop. There you go. We cleaned that up quite nicely, didn't we?
There you go, folks. You've been listening to Veterans Radio. See you next week. Until then, you are dismissed.
Not all views and opinions expressed on this on Veterans Radio reflect the views of Veterans Radio or your local station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.